fertility and sexual function are a couple of the big ticket items for our patients. It's one of the things that'll motivate them enough to come to our telehealth visits. I think that it's a wonderful opportunity for us to engage with our patients and to address issues that affect their overall health.
This is the Man Up Podcast, the doctor's guide to men's health. Each week on our podcast, we interview the top specialists of the field on various topics in men's health. If you have questions that you are too afraid to ask, we have the answers. This week, our episode is titled, Breaking Down Sperm and Male Fertility. I'm Dr. Kevin Chu, and I'm joined as always with my co-host, Dr. Justin Dubin. How you doing, bro?
I'm doing good, actually. Currently, the UConn versus USC women's college basketball game is on. I watched the Iowa game against LSU. Honestly, women's college basketball has really become fantastic. It's just really wonderful gameplay.
It's compelling. Yeah.
I've really, really enjoyed it. March Madness this year. I've just enjoyed all March Madness. You know, last week we were away. I was at NC State, watched the NC State game go down.
That's pretty magical.
It was at a bar on campus in Raleigh. Electric, baby. Burns, DJ Burns is electric. I'm all in on them. And UConn, I have a future in UConn, but I feel like everyone has a future in UConn. So,
you know, it's actually crazy in North Carolina, like in that area, how many universities there are.
Yeah.
You know, when we were there, there is NC State, you got Duke.
UNC.
You got UNC.
Other ones, but that's the three.
I think Wake Forest is in the area. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, I think Wake Forest is a little further out, but I mean, those are the big three, and the area is really nice. It's a nice area. There's some great breweries, nice little area. So I've been there a couple of times. I've enjoyed it. But yeah, man, how are you doing? You were traveling a little bit too.
Yeah. Well, I was in North Carolina, spent a little bit of time there for the weekend, and, you know, got to hang out with some family, and yeah, you know, it's nice to be back on the East Coast. You know, out here in California, the weather's been a little bit dry, a little bit more arid. So a little bit of touch of humidity was kind of nice.
Man, the weather here in Miami has been perfect. Grilled on Sunday. Yeah? Hope you had a good Easter. Sunday grilling was great. Vibes are high here. Just really good weather. Just been outside playing paddle, crushing life.
Paddle. So you like really good at it?
No, I just play it. I'm okay. I never played a racket sport in my life. I'm just learning now. I just, you know, there's a lot of good data for people who are trying to optimize and improve themselves that racket sports are actually very, very good. We should actually do an episode on that. That'd be interesting.
On racket sports,
because there's data showing that, you know, racket sport, people who play racket sports live longer and also have lower risks of dementia. I think there's probably something to do with fast twitch. So, you know, I saw that. I was like, I got to get involved. I'm a competitive person. I need something to do. And it's a good sport for a long time. And you can play into your older age as we're getting old now. But yeah, so I'm into it. I got a group of guys that I play every Sunday with. And, you know, we usually play for a nice dinner. And it's been really fun.
So break it down, because I played tennis growing up, right? Now I've kind of dabbled a little bit in pickleball here and there with some friends. But tell me the difference between pickleball and paddle.
Paddle is basically tennis. It's literally the same exact rules as tennis. You're on a pretty much smaller tennis court, except you have walls, and you can play off the walls. That's pretty much the difference. So you're moving a lot like tennis. And you're moving a lot more than pickleball, where you're just kind of pickleball. You're sitting in the kitchen and just playing, you know, in the front.
Wait, so when you bounce a ball off the wall, does that count as a bounce, or do you allow it to hit the ground once more?
No, it's about hitting the ground. So it can only hit the ground once before you get it over the net, just like tennis.
So it can bounce on the ground once, hit the wall, and then you just hit it
back over
to the other side.
But it has to hit the ground before it hits the wall. Otherwise, it's out of bounds. So you can still have it out of bounds.
Gotcha. Very interesting. Very interesting. I see a ton of my friends in Miami. It seems like a very big sport out there.
There's a lot of courts, and it's really great. Met Ava Longoria one time. Nice. She was a very nice person.
Did you say hi to her?
Yeah, we were talking. She was nice. NBD. Nice. shout out Ava Longoria if you're listening. anyway, so this week's episode, I'm pretty excited about. We have a real expert in the field of fertility, especially men's fertility, Dr. James Smith. He's the clinical professor of urology at UCSF over on the West Coast in San Francisco. And he's the chief medical officer and founding physician at Fellow. It's a company that specializes in male and semen analysis for a variety of clinical applications. And I know that Kevin and I both use these Fellow semen analysis kits. We do talk a lot about them in this episode because one thing that's really important in understanding men's health and breaking down the barriers and destigmatizing the conversation of men's health is providing men with easy access to things that they need to learn about their health. And that includes a semen analysis.
You know, in this area, semen analysis is actually really hard to get locally.
Yeah.
Right. There's only very specific labs. You know, if you talk to Justin and I, you know, we do have some IVF centers that we can kind of refer you to. But in the general sense of things, if you are just someone that wants to know about, you know, how well their fertility is, it's actually really, really hard to find a lab, to get that scheduled, to go over there, produce a specimen. It can be uncomfortable. And so Fellow's done an excellent, excellent kind of, you know, first off, the technology is awesome. Being able to kind of mail in a specimen, make sure that you can keep it so that way they can still analyze it when it arrives, as well as just the access of it has been just really game-changing, I think, for the world of male fertility.
Yeah, I mean, because guys just don't want to drive around somewhere and then masturbate in a cold, sterile room. It's the bottom line,
most
right?
Most people.
But they're willing to. But yeah. I think a lot of guys, if you're telling them, and this is the reaction I usually have, is like, oh, you can just do this at your house now. They're like, oh, yeah, I'm down for that. I can just ship it out. That's fine. And what's cool about these things is you don't actually even need to see a doctor. You can just go to the website, meetfellow.com, and actually get your own sample. And I've had a lot of guys who do this on their own, and that's how they found me, or I've had them use other products that are similar, and that they just wanted to test their fertility, and then they ended up coming to my office because their fertility wasn't normal. And you know, fertility can be the gateway or the window to your health in many ways. As we've highlighted and we will highlight in this episode, there's so many things that go into your fertility, especially male fertility, and how sperm can really be impacted by so many things in your lifestyle, your medical history, your health, that, you know, it can give you the motivation to kind of clean yourself up, get yourself right. So, you know, a sperm analysis is never a bad thing as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and this conversation with Dr. Smith was inspiring, I would say, for us too. We enjoy seeing technology and how it kind of evolves, and to kind of hear some of the, you know, thought processes and the foundation for how Fellow came to be and, you know, where it's headed. It was a really good episode. But I think our listeners will learn a lot regarding, you know, again, just common questions about male fertility and why it's important to understand your own fertility.
Yeah, and he also does a good job of kind of breaking down a lot of the things that we've talked about, but in a little bit more detail about the sperm cycle, about the role of testosterone and how it compromises male fertility, some additional lifestyle things that we haven't mentioned, including some supplement stuff. And then we also do talk about the importance of a post-vasectomy semen analysis, which we actually haven't really stressed that much in our many, many vasectomy episodes. But we do know that compliance rates are quite low for post-vasectomy. And you can always take that risk, but, you know, the risk might be a big one, and that's a baby. So, you know, we do encourage people to get post-vasectomy semen analyses. And with Fellow, it's from the comfort of your own home. So, you know, you can go to an office, you can go to your doctor's office, or you can go to use an online kit. But either way, we really do recommend you get a post-vasectomy semen analysis.
I mean, for guys, there's just so much inertia. And so you're telling me 3 months post-vasectomy, I'm taking a look, I got this LabCorp form or this Quest form, and I got to call, schedule, find a lab that works, that will do it. Guys just have a lot of inertia. So yeah, that's what's awesome about Fellow. You're right. You just look over. You probably have the box sitting over there. Grab it out, get out the cup, ejaculate into it, and be able to know, you know, quite quickly after you mail it in that you're clear and you're good to go from the post-vasectomy standpoint.
Yeah. Well, I think that's really all we got to say. I think it's a great episode. I hope you guys enjoy. I want to thank Dr. Smith again for coming on, and I hope you guys learn a lot. I think it is really going to be, I think April has some fertility awareness involved. There's a lot of fertility awareness days in there. So we're going to really focus a lot with this episode, and I think the following episode or two, on male fertility and infertility. So really enjoy this series. I think this is going to be the start of a few. Anything else, Kev?
Nope, that's it.
All right, guys. As always, please download, subscribe, give us a review of 5 stars on all podcasting platforms. Find us on YouTube. We're getting a lot more listeners on YouTube. We're using these great cameras, so we're pretty fun to watch, I hope. We're good-looking dudes, so if you want to see our beautiful faces and me wearing a Miami Hurricane shirt right now, go ahead, go on YouTube. But that's always appreciated. So thanks for listening as always, and enjoy the episode. Guys, if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably interested in learning about your health. When it comes to understanding your fertility, there's no better test than the semen analysis.
For a long time, however, the process of getting a semen analysis was difficult. There were not many places to get it done, and when you were able to, you'd have to go to an office, uncomfortably provide a sample in a cold, sterile facility. Nothing easy or fun about that.
Fortunately, there is a new and better way to provide a semen analysis, and that's with Fellow. Through Fellow, you get an at-home semen analysis kit that sends you reliable results in less than 2 business days after providing a sample in the comfort of your home. And guess what? If you had a vasectomy and need to confirm that you are sperm-free, you can do that with Fellow from the comfort of your home, too.
That's right. No more awkward trips to the office. No more worries about finding a doctor who provides these services. Simply go to meetfellow.com. That is meetfellow.com. And order your semen analysis or post-vasectomy semen analysis kit, and they will ship it directly to your home.
Listen, we both love using Fellow for our patients, but the best part is you don't even need a script. Just go to meetfellow.com and purchase it online yourself. So if you or your partner are interested in learning more about your fertility status, check out Fellow at meetfellow.com and purchase a kit today. As men's health specialists, we know guys are shaving their balls. Yeah, we examine a lot of you, so we literally see it, but we also have the data showing it, too.
That's right. According to research, over 85% of men trim their pubes. Not only that, but research shows that over 70% of women prefer a partner with at least partially trimmed pubic hair.
So guys, we know you're trimming the edges, and we know that most women prefer you manscape. So if you're going to shave your balls, why not use the best men's grooming kit around? We're talking about Manscaped.
With the Manscaped Performance Package 4.0, you get the Lawnmower 4.0 with their all-new skin-safe electric trimmer that protects your balls from getting those cuts we've all had in the past. You also get the Weed Whacker 2.0 for trimming your nose and ear hairs. And let me tell you guys, we all need to do a better job of this.
Yep, that's right. Kevin and I both have the performance package, and we really love it. Manscaping has never been easier for us. And for our listeners, we have a special promotion. Go to manscaped.com and enter promo code MANUP and get 20% off your first purchase.
Go get your Manscaped products today. Your balls and your partner will thank you.
So we're so excited to be joined by Dr. James Smith. He's a clinical professor of urology at UCSF, and he's the chief medical officer and founding physician at Fellow. It's a company that specializes in male and semen analyses for a variety of clinical applications. And before we get going, Dr. Smith, Kevin and I are very familiar with your work. We've been following you, and we've admired you for a long time. We've worked with you to some degree, both of us. Can you tell us a bit about yourself for our listeners, a little bit of your background and what led you to Fellow?
Well, I really appreciate you guys having me on. It's really a pleasure to be connecting with you guys and your listeners in this format. So thank you again for having me on. You know, my background, so I was a molecular biology undergrad, so I loved science, as so many of us do when we get into medicine. As I began my journey through medical school, I was really interested in this blend of science and molecular biology and basic science with access to care and big picture, more public health issues. So that's a theme that really has run throughout my career. And once I did my, I was at UCSF for medical school, went to University of Utah, where one of the highlights of my residency was spending about 6 months with an andrologist named Doug Carroll. And so I was in his lab under the microscope looking at meiosis cells and just loved it. And I just loved the process of how sperm grew and developed. But at the same time, I really began to see how few people there were, how few doctors there were to help take care of men who had fertility problems. And so I realized that this was kind of the perfect blend for me. So I went to UCSF and did a 2-year fellowship with Tom Liu on the sexual medicine side. And Ira Charlip and Paul Turek and Tom Walsh were some of my mentors when I was on the fertility side. And I got to dive into the science of how sperm are made from stem cell and ion channels and how they wiggle around. But then also just understanding, like, hey, from a health policy standpoint, there are a lot of inequities in getting access to reproductive care. And so that in turn led to me taking a faculty job at UCSF. And I spent about 14, 15 years as a core faculty member at UCSF and was director of male reproductive health there for that time. And it was fantastic, training residents, fellows, doing a range of research to help move the needle. But about 5 years ago, I was approached by the founder of Fellow, and he had just a lot of passion for what can we do to help urologists and doctors provide better care. And one thing led to another. There's lots more to that story, but it's, eventually a year ago, I took on the job as chief medical officer, in large part because I get to do both of the basic science, the lab science, but also try to develop tools that help our patients and help us as physicians in the field.
That's awesome, Dr. Smith. I mean, I'll tell you on behalf of, Justin and I, everything that you've done, very inspiring to us as young andrologists. So,
absolutely. We hope to true kind leader of, in the field.
Absolutely. So, today our conversation, we're going to get into Fellow a little bit later, but right now for our listeners, we're going to really break down a question that a lot of guys, females will have. So let's just start off with a really general question. What is sperm?
All right. Well, sperm is a cell in our body. It's a cell in our body, like a hair cell or a skin cell or any other cell in our body that has a specialized function. And this particular cell, its job is to combine with an egg and fertilize an egg and start the process of making a baby, starting an embryo and turning in ultimately into a baby. So it's half of the genetic component that goes into making a baby.
Nice. And, it's obviously the aspect that the biological male creates. And like you said, and I think one of the most important topics or concepts is this idea of how long it takes sperm to develop, because it's so different from females to males. And a lot of the things of how your sperm can be impacted by, or the lifestyle things, the things we're going to go into, are kind of based off of this length of time, correct?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And you're right about bringing that up, Justin. And so within the testicle, the factory floor, so to speak, of making sperm, there are specialized tubes that allow the creation of these sperm cells. They start from something called a sperm stem cell, and those sperm stem cells go through a series of changes that eventually turn into sperm. And that process takes, it's kind of a variable length, but it takes probably around 50 days, 60 days, something like that, for a sperm stem cell to turn into a sperm. And then it takes another few weeks for that sperm cell to leave the factory floor and travel along the highway until it actually comes out in baby-making mode, out the penis.
I like that, baby-making mode.
so overall, it's probably about 2.5 months, 3 months. And so that's, as we say to our patients, I mean, we generally say whatever we're going to do today, it's going to take about 3 months before we're gonna see, whether there's an effect. And it can take longer than that.
It's a very, very important fact, as we've talked about, Justin and I, on previous episodes, 3 months, right? So things that you're doing we're going to talk about a little later about lifestyle and stuff like that. You consider 3 months for the lifespan or for the sperm to develop. Now, Dr. Smith, when it comes to fertility, there are so many things that can impact your sperm quality. And there's, you know, there's a big focus now on optimizing one's health. So when you think of sperm quality, you can kind of break it down to a few categories that can cause issues, such as production, obstruction issues, and medical problems in lifestyle. So on the last two, we're going to focus on the medical problems. Can you give us some information on potential medical problems or health issues that can compromise sperm production?
Yeah, I sure can. I think it's a great question. I think that this is a wonderful opportunity for us to connect with our male patients. I think that fertility and sexual function are a couple of the big ticket items for our patients. And it's one of the things that will motivate them enough to come to our telehealth visits or to come in person to our clinics. And I think that it's a wonderful opportunity for us to engage with our patients and to address issues that affect their overall health in general. And fertility and sexual function both do that. It's a common, as I'm doing my history, getting my physical exam, and eventually getting lab testing, I'm assessing whether or not they're overweight. Someone who's overweight can absolutely have their fertility affected, whether or not they use tobacco products or marijuana. Whether they're taking a range of medications, blood pressure medications can affect fertility. Whether or not they've had COVID before, whether or not they've had a recent flu. So if they had prostatitis or orchitis, epididymitis, do I find a varicocele on exam? So there are a whole host of potential problems, and those are kind of the common ones. I mean, I wonder about other exposures in our life, exposures that we don't really have a way of quantifying, pesticides in our food, BPA, phthalates, these flexible plastics that are around us all the time, microplastics. How do these things affect our reproductive health? And what evidence is there for that? And for the most part, not very much evidence one way or the other, but we think they are probably contributing to problems globally in sperm quality.
It's a really good summary that you gave there of how, you know, I think a window to someone's fertility is a window to their health oftentimes, right? And exactly what you said, and with regards to the exposures, we have a guest who we've already recorded that yes. We're going to probably play after this, thanks to you, that we're excited to have our listeners listen to. But, you know, that is an interesting topic. But, you know, when we're talking about medical problems, obviously the things we see all the time are things like diabetes, obesity, and these are problems that people don't associate with fertility, but obviously it can impact them. Now, a lot of that can be reflected in lifestyle. So, you know, what are specific things that you look for that can be correctable, or issues with lifestyle? You mentioned a few that, you know, our listeners should be aware of or maybe need to correct if they're starting to think about having a child.
And Justin, when you say lifestyle, I mean, so when I hear that, I mean, there are lots of things that could get bundled into the kind of the lifestyle category.
Yeah.
What are some of the things that you're thinking about?
I'm thinking of the things you said, like a sedentary lifestyle, you know, lack of sleep. We're talking about high stress environment, smoking, marijuana, you know, exposure to hot tubs, so, like all the wet heat kind of things. What are some other ones? Maybe I'm missing out. Are there other ones that you're thinking of right off the bat that maybe people aren't thinking about commonly?
Yeah, no, I think that's great. And in fact, I mean, my whole career, I have thought about those kinds of questions. As I was finishing my fellowship, I sought out a particular kind of grant called the K Award. And so this allowed me to have 3 years of mentored research training. And one of the first projects that I considered was actually a randomized trial where I would compare lifestyle modifications and seeing whether or not that improves semen analysis parameters. Turns out that those are really, really hard studies to do. A few years ago, we looked at antioxidants as part of a big multi-center study. Mm-hmm. You guys have reviewed this, the MOXIe trial. And, you know, we have seen studies, and we certainly think from a physiology standpoint that getting antioxidants in taking supplements could improve sperm quality. But our MOXIe study didn't show that. And I don't know that it definitively says antioxidants and supplements don't work, but but rather that it's really hard to study these things. People have so much going on in their environments. But specifically, when I'm evaluating patients, I do talk to them about their diets. I mean, I do talk to them about fast food. I talk to them about organic diets. I ask them about their weight and their weight changes. And so many men are overweight. And you know, we'll get to this a little bit down the road. But I mean, I've incorporated all of this these kinds of questions into the fellow experience. And so these are questions that I'm actually tackling actively now. But so I wonder about their diet, whether they're sedentary or not. I wonder about some lifestyle related things like testosterone use, and are people taking growth hormone or testosterone as a way to try to enhance their overall health, or at least the thought that that's going to work. And I do talk to patients about, do you have a primary care doctor, and are you plugged in? And most of the time, the answer for my patients is no. And they're coming to me, and this probably happens to you both as well, is that they come to us first because this is the thing that is most pressing to them. And I, in turn, am trying to find a primary care doctor for them to see.
Right.
Yep.
Absolutely. Now, Dr. Smith, you mentioned testosterone. Let's kind of go back on that, because this can be a little counterintuitive for our patients. So let's start off. So what is the role of testosterone in male fertility?
Well, testosterone is such an important hormone for men. I mean, it's important for our brain and our bones and our muscles and mood, and it has such an important impact all across the body. It's also really important for sperm production. So, and we can go into as much of detail as
you think. Yeah, can you give us a little bit of the background? Because Kevin and I are always saying this, but we don't explain it. So we would love you to have you give a little bit of explanation of, you know, how testosterone really is improving or helping sperm development.
Sure. So the way that I like to talk to my patients about this is I'll tell my patients that the testicles really have two jobs. You've got two testicles, you got two jobs. You got some sperm that need to be made, and you've got some testosterone that needs to be made. Within this factory floor, those sperm-producing tubes deep inside the testicle, they rely on a very high concentration of testosterone within the testicle to make sperm. And if there's not a high concentration of testosterone inside, you get arrest. You get stoppage of that development from sperm stem cells to sperm. And you get this phenomenon that's called maturation arrest. But outside the testicle, there tends to be about a tenth as much testosterone. So floating around in our blood, we need it for all those other important things, for our brain and our mood and our bones and our muscle and everything else. And our pituitary gland is able to regulate all this stuff. It's the CPU of our body. It's the conductor of what's going on. And so if we have enough testosterone in our blood, then that CPU says, oh, I got enough, I'm all good. And it shuts down the signals to the testicle to say, make your own, and have lots of that 10X testosterone inside the testicle where you actually need it. And so for our patients who come in and are taking testosterone, it's telling the pituitary gland, hey, we're doing great. And then the testicle is not doing so great, and it gets smaller and it stops making sperm because it's not getting those signals that it needs.
And I think that is such an important part, because, you know, I think that people, especially younger men, and we all see it when they come in and they're on testosterone, and then you tell them that you need testosterone to have sperm, and they're like, I am on testosterone, they don't get it. It is counterintuitive in many ways. But I think that key is exactly like you said, is this idea of the environment of the sperm. It's the testicle testosterone level, which, you know, unfortunately, when you're taking exogenous testosterone that's not made by your body, it's not getting to that factory. And I really love that way you describe it. Now, how long can these things impact it, right? And it goes back to that question before, but for guys taking testosterone, how do you typically counsel men who come in who have been on testosterone and really are interested in fertility?
Well, the first thing that I do is I get a basic set of labs. I like to see where right. these guys are. So I'll get a T, an FSH, LH, estradiol. Typically, we'll get a prolactin. I've started more and more using 17-hydroxyprogesterone. Mm-hmm. Dr. Ramasamy in Miami had shown interesting data about using that as a way of measuring intratesticular testosterone. So I found that to be a helpful tool. I'll get a semen analysis. Some men have enough sperm even when they're right. on testosterone. Yeah. So if I had a man with 100 million moving sperm and he's on testosterone, I may not change him. But if that patient comes in and he's injecting 200 milligrams IM weekly or something of testosterone and his blood levels of testosterone are 1500 and he's got 5 million sperm or 1 million or he's azoospermic, he's got no sperm. Well, that's a guy that I'm going to tell him that it's going to take at least 3 months. And it could very well take much longer than that. And I've seen it take much longer than that. I've seen it not come back. I would tell them it would take at least 3 months. And it's a difficult conversation to have with patients. I mean, they're on it because of how it helps them feel better or to get performance gains in one way or the other. And so I'm very sympathetic to that. And so it can be a really tricky balance clinically. I'm often will switch them to another medication to try to stimulate testicular testosterone, but it's tricky. Those don't always lead to them feeling as well as they did with testosterone.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I see that a lot in my practice. When I do shift them over to the ones that kind of help with endogenous production, you know, symptomatically they definitely feel that, and they're definitely kind of looking at when they can kind of get back to the TRT. But, you know, what we, you know, kind of counsel is that trying to get your sperm back. And once we get that, and once we get you to where you want to in terms of conception, can kind of head back that way. Now, we're going to kind of shift the conversation a little bit to, we see in the news a lot. You go on Twitter, you open up your webpage, and they're always talking about male fertility and it's declining. We're in a dropping sperm rates everywhere. So, you know, do you think that there's basis behind that sperm counts are really declining?
I think, Kevin, it's a really, really interesting conversation and a really interesting question. A colleague of mine, Shauna Swan, has been really at the forefront of this, and her book, Countdown, you know, she really dives into this. Mm-hmm. She's now a adjunct faculty at UCSF, so I've had the opportunity to collaborate with her, and this has been an area that I think is really interesting. I mean, she has looked around the world and looked at sperm concentrations over the past decades and has documented that there are significant declines in sperm concentration. I think if I want to quibble or many people do argue against there being a change is that how well are you truly measuring this? Do we have uniform measurements of sperm quality around the world? And we really don't. And I think when I look at the United States, I think a weakness of our systems is we have no national surveillance system for semen, and nothing that's changing over time as well. And I think so it's difficult to answer those kind of questions with a lot of certainty. I certainly am not surprised at that finding. When I think right. about a world today of 2024 versus our world of 1930, 1924, let's say, I mean, there are just so many things in our environment, whether it's heat and hot tubs. We weren't sitting in hot tubs in 1924, all of the plastics and pesticides right. and other chemicals that are in our environment now. I'm not at all surprised to think that sperm numbers are lower.
And I think that conversation, especially starting, I guess her first paper came out several years ago, but it's become more in the news. You know, guys, more and more guys are getting concerned about their health. They're getting concerned about their fertility. Their partners are getting concerned about their fertility. And I think that we're seeing a lot of young guys come in. And so our question to you, if someone is interested in assessing their fertility as a man, what's the best way to go about doing so?
Well, I think that critical to figuring that out is to get a semen analysis. I mean, you really just don't have another way. I mean, men will come into us and they'll say, well, you know, Dr. Smith, my semen looks a little thinner, or it looks a little clumpier, or
yeah,
it's a little more, it's a little less. Yeah. And, you know, we've heard those conversations, but, you know, without getting out the microscope and looking at the cells under the microscope and counting them up and counting up how many are moving around, you really can't quantify that in any other way. So a semen analysis is an essential starting point to answering those questions from our patients.
So, you know, I'll tell you, you know, my clinic, I don't have a lab. And so it is hard for some, you know, we sometimes request to go to LabCorp or, you know, Quest, but it can be difficult. Not all those places have, you know, an andrology lab capable to do semen analysis. So, you know, that's where fellows kind of come in and been a great help to, you know, a lot of urologists out there. So can you tell us about fellow and what you guys do?
Yeah, well, boy, I mean, fellow started because of exactly those pain points you're describing. I mean, I was introduced to the founder of fellow. His name is Will Matthews, our current CEO. And he really came in with, how can I help from a fertility standpoint? And he asked me, he said, what are the biggest pain points in your practice? And we talked about things like cryopreservation and others, but a semen analysis is so fundamental to everything that we do. And my patients in San Francisco come from hours away. Even when they come across San Francisco, it takes 45 minutes to get there. There are huge burdens on patients and we're asking them to produce a sample, to masturbate in a doctor's office or in a lab. Like, how terrible is that? You know, if you were to think of that outside the medical context, that you're like going to do something that's taboo in our society, and you're going to ask them to come do that taboo thing in a doctor's office, and that, I mean, it's kind of mind-blowing. We sort of normalize that sometimes, but so that, from a patient perspective, big pain point. From my staff standpoint, my secretary would spend 3 hours a day. Even at UCSF, we have a fantastic andrology lab. But she would still spend 3 hours a day scheduling semen analyses for these guys, playing phone tag, trying to set things up. And then my nurses, where's the result from LabCorp or Quest or, you know, local hospital X, Y, or Z? Pulling it off the fax machine, or it's emailed to this email address, or it didn't get emailed.
Right.
And so my nurses are spending hours a day trying to sort out where these results are. And then they look at the result and they're like, well, what does this mean, Dr. Smith? Because all you have are these normal ranges. And how do I interpret this? And for what do I actually do? So there were basically those two pain points when we were looking at fellow. One was this, how can you make a report that's more interpretable? And so we tried to incorporate basically how I would talk to patients about it. And we put total modal count front and center because it's a lot easier to interpret how much sperm is there, how much moving sperm is there than the other things. And how do we clinically think about this? Then the other challenge was, why do we have a 1 hour time? Why is it that we have to get the sample to the lab in an hour? And so that's what we spent a lot of money and a lot of time doing the R&D to try to figure out what leads to unpredictable motility declines. And time, temperature, bacterial overgrowth, and enough nutrition for a sperm were the big ticket items. So we experimented with a lot of preservatives to get the right nutrients, a lot of antibiotics, a lot of temperatures, until eventually we came up with a formula that is able to allow us to predict sperm decline really accurately. So when a sample then comes into the lab, we're able to measure it, measure the semen analysis, but then very accurately predict back to where it was 35 hours before. And that's been just such a huge game changer in my practice. I mean, now the nursing team, it's very easy for them. My secretary is able to spend time doing other things. And patients don't have to drive in. I can do my vasectomy reversal and they can stay hours away and they just send in a sample and we could have a telephone chat or a telehealth chat. So that's kind of how it started. I remember, Justin, back in the beginning when things were getting rolling, I remember being excited that we'd do 10 semen analyses in a week. I'm like, wow, that's so great. And then just the other, like 2-3 weeks ago, it was almost 450 semen analyses in one day.
I mean, I'm sending you probably at least 10 a week. So, I mean, like Kevin says, I don't have access to a lab. And fellow, especially as andrologist, has been a game changer for us, right? Like, it's just, The big thing for us, at least from a men's health perspective in my brain, is that idea of doing something at home, doing it in the comfort of your house, something that's so, you know, taboo for many people and makes it uncomfortable. Where, you know, I think the numbers and the way that it's you know, delivered in such a digestible format is also helpful, because the first thing I always tell a patient when I'm going over their semen analysis is, I said, you know, there's a lot of numbers. It's easy to get lost in the sauce here. Let me break this down easily. And you guys do such a great job with it that they have a little bit better understanding before they even see me what to expect from me. And I think that patient, we're in an age of information and data gathering, that the more information that a patient can understand about themselves, the more value it becomes to them. And I think it can help them understand and improve the things that we talked about, whether it's lifestyle, things like that. And you actually even have recommendations and comments on that in the forums. But I found it incredibly helpful. And I think it's really been a really important part for my practice and also for my patients' care.
Well, I really appreciate that feedback. I mean, I really appreciate you saying so. I mean, I think that's something that I'm excited to be part of the team here, because I mean, I'm trying to share that with our patients. I mean, I share that with our engineering team and the product team that's actually making all of that stuff look that way. And I'm excited to be part of a team that really puts patients and doctors first.
Yeah, and I think one thing I do want to mention that I found interesting about Fellow is that we're talking about it that, you know, oftentimes Kevin or I in the office are referring patients to the site or giving them information, or we have boxes in my clinic to register them in the office. But this is something that patients, if they're interested, or people, or if they're interested, they can actually do this on their own accord by going to the website, which is also very good for people to know, because I've actually had a lot of patients come to me after using a Fellow kit who found it on their own and then have come and said, hey, I think I have a problem with my semen analysis. Can you explain to me how I can get help? And, you know, that's how you diagnose people with things like diabetes. These are people who haven't gone to the doctor in 40 years. And so, you know, if you're listening and it's something that you're worried about going to talk to a doctor about, you actually don't even have to see a doctor first to actually start exploring your health and learning about yourself.
You know, I will say one thing. I did have a guy come in, did a Fellow, and he just wanted to be like, is there such thing as my numbers being too good? And I was like, oh, that's awesome, man. That's awesome. This looks great. You're great here, dude. You're fine.
Yeah, but it is important. It's important for people to know, like, you know, what you've done is you've made it accessible both for the patient or any person and the providers who want to help their patients.
I agree. And that's a big thing. You know, I was connecting these dots between that kind of the side of me that loves the molecular biology and the science and the part of me that likes access to care. And the semen analysis, when it's difficult to get, it's uncomfortable to get, it's expensive to get, and insurance isn't covering it. You know, by breaking down barriers, making it pretty affordable and easy to get for anybody, I'm excited on the one hand to make it a wedding gift, and, you know, we put it on the wedding registry and people get, hey, look, if there's a problem, they need to know about it ahead of time. They can come see Kevin and Justin and get fixed ahead of time. The other part that I am really excited about too, is that when I think about from a science standpoint, I get a lot of questions in my practice about, hey, does this drug that I'm on, does it affect my fertility? And the FDA came out in 2017 with guidelines for testing fertility when there's a drug, whether it's a, you know, tyrosine kinase inhibitor or something else. But they give recommendations that fertility testing should be done, but it's often not done, mostly because it's so difficult to do. And so I'm excited to be able to facilitate that kind of research. And more I'm getting requests from our scientific colleagues to use Fellow and to bake it into clinical trials. And I also see that as a great way of breaking down barriers and access to that kind of information, to look more at surveillance systems for semen quality. So I think there are a lot of great opportunities.
Yeah, and one thing that we haven't talked about is the post-vasectomy semen analysis. Now, this is something that you know, we all do vasectomies, one of our favorite surgeries. You know, Kevin and I have talked a lot. We've done multiple episodes on the vasectomy and stressed the importance of the post-vasectomy semen analysis, which is the semen analysis after about 2 to 3 months or 20 ejaculations, you know, that confirms your vasectomy has worked and you have no sperm in your ejaculate. And while it's pretty simple for clinics to run, I do feel that we've always had this issue of patients not doing it. Now, can you kind of just highlight what, you know, what Fellow is doing differently and how it can provide people who kind of don't want to have to come into the office to provide a semen analysis again, what we can do for them?
Sure. Yeah. So the PVSA, the post-vasectomy semen analysis, is such a common part of urologist practice. It's so widely used in large urology private practices, small urology practices, academic practices, the VA, county hospitals. I mean, it's such a prevalent procedure, such a high volume procedure around the country. Our AUA guidelines state that you should get a post-vasectomy semen analysis around 3 months, as you said, afterward to check. In my own UCSF practice, I would say, despite me telling patients, get this done, got to get this done, maybe 25-30% of my patients were actually getting it done. Despite me saying, get this done, get this done, get this done. In practices that really, really are calling and, you know, scheduling an appointment ahead of time and doing everything that they can, practices might get up to like 60%. Compliance, something like that. I mean, the literature ranges is like 25-70%. And those are typically in a single center where they're like really, really trying super hard. So we've looked at this and, you know, the customer service and high quality customer service is really, really important to Fellow, making sure that doctors and patients have a great experience. So there are text message reminders, there are email reminders. Once a patient's registered their kit, the Fellow knows about them and is basically doing the work of the doctor's office staff. The doctor's office doesn't have to do it anymore. And so the Fellow team is providing, you know, pretty simple reminders that, hey, get this done. So we looked at this and analyzed data on about, you know, more than 10,000 guys who were followed for more than 6 months and are going to present this at AUA this year. But what we've seen is that compliance in these guys is in the mid 80s. And so better than 80% of the time guys are getting their test done. And it doesn't matter whether a guy was in a large practice, a small practice, an academic practice. And that's unique. I mean, there's never been a system that improves access to this really important fundamental piece of post-vasectomy care. Like Fellow, and because of the great customer service, and it's easy to do, it's at home. There have been other mail-in approaches, but they've been more like a 50% compliance. So it's kind of all that easy to use, text messaging, the kind of the whole package has worked really well.
Absolutely. I mean, I will tell you, since we started using it in our practice, the compliance has been just so much higher. It was always kind of a chase around trying to get the patients to do the 3 month, go to the lab. And so definitely I can see that. I see, you know, that I can see the increased compliance. I want to just take,
I mean,
one
it's great
pause
for me
here.
Too. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think this conversation about post-vasectomy compliance, I mean, it ties in again. I want to do everything I can to help improve access to care. And so I'm also have been looking not only in the post-vasectomy compliance, but also in just getting a regular semen analysis done. So this is a project that we're working on now. And so, while that's really good for, you know, mid 80% range across the country, large practice, small practice, like every practice, it works really well. We've started looking at how compliant people are with the full semen analysis, like the regular fertility semen analysis, and it's even better. So, you know, there's even as motivated as people are for the vasectomy check, and, you know, they're like, they'll dive into doing it, it's no problem. It's about 10% better for fertility semen analysis. So when you order that test, it's almost certain that the guys are going to get it done. And I see that as a pain point in my practice. I order, you know, just a standard, hey, go to LabCorp. They come back in a month and they haven't gotten it done.
Yeah.
Well, why didn't you get it done? Or where are the results? And they come back and they waste the visit because, well, we can speculate about what their findings are. But so we're looking, we'll submit this to ASRM. You know, one of the things that, you know, along these lines that I'd like to give a shout out to my colleague, Dr. Alicia Talani, who's an REI fellow. She just presented data over at PCRS, Pacific Coast Reproductive Society, and she was looking at whether or not education, income, and race were barriers to getting the test done. And she found that for about 11,000 guys who used the test, it didn't matter whether someone was black or white, rich or poor, that they got their kits turned in at extremely high rates. And so that's just another aspect of the access to care puzzle that I'm excited Fellow is helping out with.
That's great. That's really great. So Dr. Smith, we got you on, and you know, we want to be able to share to our listeners your, you know, you're just such a great specialist. So can you give us, you know, how you counsel your patients basically on a quick breakdown of what you are assessing in a semen analysis?
Well, I'm assessing a person's basic chance of trying to conceive. You know, I think from a big picture perspective, what I'm trying to get out of the semen analysis is how much moving sperm is there? What's the total number of moving sperm? I'm trying to see whether or not a person is, you know, pretty good, you know, and I'm thinking like, are they 40, 50 million moving sperm? And that person is likely to conceive with just having sex. And so we spend a lot of time about just timing sex and sex with ovulation and trying to optimize that, lubricants that might be potentially toxic. Or is a person kind of in a little bit lower range, you know, somewhere 5 million moving sperm to maybe 20, 30, 40 million moving sperm. And are they maybe like IUI kind of range? And is there anything I can do to try to help them get out of that IUI range? Can we improve their diet? Can we stop smoking? Can we have more regular exercise? You know, what can we do to try to move them out of IUI and get them just pregnant on their own? But by the same token, I'll reassure them that, you know, people conceive with 10 million moving sperm. Maybe it's going to take a little bit longer, but as long as you've got at least one sperm in there, it's possible to conceive. Mm-hmm. You know, men with 5 million moving sperm or less, I'm generally thinking about doing IVF, but I'm thinking about the same thing. You know, what can I do as their doctor to help improve the quality of sperm, but also trying to give them some hope and some reassurance that, you know, just because you have 1 million sperm, that's low, but you may be able to conceive and it may not take 3 months or 6 months. Maybe it's going to take a couple of years. And if you want to accelerate the process, there are some other fertility treatments that we could do.
I think that's a great summary. And I think that, you know, one of the interesting things with semen analysis, which you really alluded to, and I tell my patients the same, is even though your numbers may be low, sometimes other numbers, when you're using especially total motile sperm count, which is the important one, even if you're lower in some levels, other levels may make up for it in certain ways to, you know, actually improve your quality in a way that, you know, you don't anticipate, or, you know, if you can't see the big picture. And I think it's important to talk to a specialist about this. But, you know, I often see guys who have a low sperm count with a partner and they're worried. They're like, someone told me it's impossible to have a kid. I mean, I'm like, listen, you have 8 million total motile sperm count. It's lower, but it's not impossible. And, you know, they've had two kids already naturally. And it's one of those things where they're told that it's a miracle baby or things like that. But I think setting expectations and understanding your levels and understanding your fertility status is very, very important, as you said. And I'm not a math guy, but I know all you need is one, one sperm. So is it more difficult? Of course, it's much more difficult potentially, but it's possible. And I think there is an inherent bias because, you know, there's probably people walking around who have a concentration of 7 million who have two kids and we just never know, right? There's a lot of things going on.
I think, Justin, you know, to that point, I think, you know, people worry too much about morphology. And
I think that's exactly what we're going to ask.
I figured we're going that way. I mean, because, you know, morphology, we look at that. And if we were to go back 30 years, then morphology was a more accurate predictor of fertility success or IVF success. But the test has just gone so stringent on just calling things that are well within the range of normal for a man, calling it abnormal, that the test has approached meaninglessness. I mean, I think there are some abnormalities that are just clearly bad. Mm-hmm. Globozoospermia,
right.
Pinhead sperm, lots of them, bad. If somebody has stump-tailed sperm and they have a motile cilia syndrome or cartagenors, mm-hmm. or something like that, dysplasia of the fibrous sheath. I mean, these are kind of rare conditions, but these conditions, absolutely can affect problems. But I mean, our run-of-the-mill morphology assessments have just gotten so strict that we see pregnant patients, pregnant couples, where they've got 1% normal morphology. But to say to somebody, oh, you've got 5% normal morphology, hey, you're all good, and 4% is suddenly bad. I mean, there's just, there's a breakdown in how morphology is assessed. I'm proud to be part of the American Society of Andrology, and the ASA leads training sessions for staff. And these are outstanding training sessions every year. And it's a whole day course on how you can learn to assess morphology. That being said, it's still very, very difficult to assess. I think that there's a lot of opportunity for us to understand male reproductive health in semen. I think that there are a lot of tests that we can develop down the road. And that's something that I'm excited about spearheading as fellow grows. This will not be the last test that fellow has, but developing tests that understand fertility from semen, there will be more to come. There's a lot to learn there.
It's exciting times. Exciting times. Dr. Smith, we talked a little bit about it before we started this podcast, and so I just want to get your thoughts. Who do you think should be getting a semen analysis? Because there's no set of things like in terms of screening or anything like that or any sort of guidelines necessarily. But, who do you think, in general should be?
Well, I mean, this is something I have conversations with the AUA guidelines committee folks and talk to them about. I mean, our ASRM guidelines would suggest or do say that a couple should try to conceive for a year with unprotected intercourse if the couple's 35 years or younger, or if they're 36, if the woman is 36 or older, you wait 6 months. I frankly just disagree with that. I think that a guy should get a semen analysis way sooner in the process. It's an inexpensive, easy to do. In the case of fellow, you can do it at home. It doesn't cost too much money. And it can give you that kind of big picture understanding of, are you good? Okay, you're 18 years old, and hey, you're fine. You're likely to be fine unless something happens. Hey, you've got problems. There's azoospermia. There's really low, you got a severe oligo, or kind of low. Hey, maybe when I'm 19, 20, 21, I should go see Dr. Chu or Dr. Dubin, and I should get to see if I've got that grade 3 varicocele that I should take care of.
Right.
So I think that the guidelines are conflating male and female fertility. And I think that we do a disservice to our patients. I think that we typically, as reproductive urologists and male health specialists, we generally see guys at the end of that pathway. They've Absolutely. Gone to the OB, yeah. They've gone to REI, they've come to us, and they're already well into IUI or IVF. And they come to us, they say, Dr. Smith, I'm gonna start my IVF retrieval in 2 weeks. What can you do for me?
You nailed it on that.
So what do you do? I mean, can we change their diet, their lifestyle, get them exercising more, stop smoking weed, and then 2 weeks gonna be all good? No, it just takes longer. So I think for us, we can make the biggest impact for our patients and for men by just getting checked out earlier on. I mean, it's inexpensive, it's easy. Guys will come in to see us. If there's a problem that we can't fix, they're still going to be in that same pathway.
Yeah, that's a really excellent answer. And I think that we're moving that way with more knowledge and education on men's health. And, and then that kind of leads to my next comment is like, what you've alluded to is that, in the fertility pathway, men are often the last person to get assessed or even checked, where we know that, of course, the female has this unfair burden, this unfair stigma on fertility, where we know that 50% of the time there's a male factor involved. So, how do you think that we can destigmatize these conversations? And why do you think it's important that men get evaluated for fertility sooner, which it seems like you've given us some of an answer, but how do we get guys talking about this more too?
I think that men for us, that we generally aren't very well plugged into the primary care system. I think that women are more plugged into the primary care system. They generally have a gynecologist who they've gotten comfortable seeing through, annual or every couple of year pap smears. There's a relationship with their obstetrician and gynecologist as time goes by. And most of the time for us, for men, we're generally not seeking out primary care. We think we're all good. And we think that we're
true.
And so it's not until something comes up. There's a fertility problem, my penis is not working the way that I want to, or I'm ejaculating too fast, or any reproductive or sexual function problem, that they then seek out some help. I think that there is a lot of fertility problems out there. And I think that it's worth getting a simple test. And if there's a problem, get in to be evaluated much sooner, and not wait till the end when you're doing IVF or IUI. IVF, we've written a number of papers on this. I mean, you're looking at least $15,000 a month. And more recent estimates, probably in the 20,000 plus range for an IVF cycle. If you can shift somebody from IVF to a less intensive kind of treatment, you're saving them a lot of money.
Yeah.
So I think there are public health questions. I think there's just like money out of a person's pocket. If you get seen sooner, get assessed by a urologist, we may be able to save you a lot of money.
That's a great point. And also just time, right? I face that we see a lot of patients when they're like, their partner maybe late 30s already, and then you're also finding that there's an issue with the male. Again, if a lot of this was shifted earlier, find it, that time becomes less of a pain point or a stress point for couples.
So true. If you get them early in the journey, they're fine making changes like this. Oh, you're just kind of curious about this. Okay, great. Well, here are some things you can work on. Let's spend the next year working on those things. And you're right, they're not so worried about time, unless it's been 3 years or 2 years trying. They want to get pregnant tomorrow.
Right. And I think the one final thing about it is, if you're a guy, you really need to understand what women go through for IVF. It's physically, mentally, emotionally, absolutely draining. And for you not to just do something simple like masturbate, which gives you pleasure, into a cup in your house, to help your partner to maybe see if they don't have to go through that process, I think that's kind of crazy. So, I think if anything, the whole thing should be support your partner, because they're going to be taking on the worst aspect of it, unfortunately, in a lot of these situations too.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Justin, on that. I mean, I think that I'm happy to be part of changing the conversation around this. I mean, because it's just easy. Just, get a fellow kit mailed to your house, and it's so easy to do.
But right.
Before the conversation would be something like, okay, where do I get one done? Oh, my LabCorp doesn't do it. Oh, my doctor, you got to go find a doctor. Well, then it's got all these hoops to jump through for you to go see a doctor. Where's the doctor do it? I don't know where to do it. I mean, in the Bay Area, LabCorp and Quest don't offer it at very many places. Right. There's one place in San Jose, you got to get down there and you've got 30 minutes to get your sample. So if that's the level of hoop jumping through that somebody's got to do, they're like, I can't take time off of work. So again, I'm excited to be part of, be part of something where that's not even something you have to think about. It's easy now.
Yeah.
Well, this has been a fantastic conversation, really enjoyable. And I think our listeners really learned a lot. Last question, any final comments on sperm and male fertility you'd like to share with our listeners?
this is an exciting field. I'm happy that we're part of it. I mean, there's so much that we can do. I'm just excited to be helping to move the field forward a little bit.
Awesome. Well, Dr. Smith, this was really fantastic. We want to thank you so much for coming on. We really do enjoy, listening to you and watching you to continue to advance the field. And, obviously Kevin and I do use Fellow. We're big fans. We do think that it really provides a great service to our patients, to a lot of patients, to get access to information that they may not otherwise be able to. So, keep doing what you're doing, because it rocks. And thank you so much for coming on. And tell us where our listeners can find information on you, find information on Fellow.
Okay. Well, first of all, thank you for having me on. It's been a pleasure chatting with you both today. Let's see. Well, I mean, I guess the only place I am is on LinkedIn. So if a person wanted to find me on LinkedIn, so it's a little bit professional. I don't have Instagram or any other social media. You can find Fellow through meetfellow.com.
Perfect. And I think that's it, man. You know, he's committed. He's committed to the fertility game, just LinkedIn. So, but thanks again for coming on. And this was really great.